about once a year or so, I feel like I break out the old NVIDIA Shield Portable, and it still is one of the best portable gaming devices I think ever made. It is in the shape of a game controller, like a fat Xbox controller. And inside there, they have a full Android PC with one of their first Tegra processors. And they have where it gets its Shield name from, is a flip-up, almost like a Star Trek communicator-style flip-up screen where it runs Android. And over the years, it's, you know, I'm not really getting updated anymore, but I can still run my ROM emulators on this thing. And it still works. I bought this thing in 2014.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say, released July 2013, Android Lollipop 5.1.
Whoa.
Yeah. And they issued like several updates since then. So in May of 2014, I picked this thing up, and it's still really never been surpassed by like just something that you could put in your bag, has a battery life that lasts you all day. You can maybe take on a flight, easy to use, plays classic games. And I thought, you know, it would never, I thought for sure, but I would just use this until it died and I'd never be able to replace it. Like the battery would eventually go and maybe I could open it up, maybe not, because it's a pretty tight little piece of gear. There's a lot of little seams and stuff you'd have to crack open. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to drive this thing into the ground. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Until this week. I have found a replacement for my NVIDIA Shield Portable that I think is better and has a better screen. It's a step up. It's cheaper. And I think it's going to be officially time to retire my beloved NVIDIA Shield Portable.
Does that mean Brent gets the old one?
Hello, friends, and welcome back to your weekly Linux talk show. My name is Chris.
My name is Wes.
And my name is Brent.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Nice to have you all in studio this week.
Such a treat.
It is our Scale Eve episode, and we have three wild and crazy topics. Each one of us has brought our own topic this week, and we're going to surprise each other with them and find out in real time what they are with you. Then we're going to hit the road shortly after the episode and have all kinds of stuff for you. So you know what we got to do is we got to get you our picks and our boosts and our feedback before we get out of here. We got all the standard stuffs because it is, of course, a banger of an episode. So before we get into there, let's say good morning to our virtual lug. Time appropriate greetings. Mumble Room.
Hello.
And good morning to our friends at Tailscale, tailscale.com/Linux Unplugged. Go try it for free on 100 devices and see how you can have programmable networking that is so fast, so easy, and very private. All built on top of
WireGuard.
That's right. Using the Noise Protocol, it is really easy. Zero config mesh networking for yourself as an individual or for an enterprise. Tailscale.com/Linux Unplugged. So here we are. We don't really know what we're going to talk about. I know I've hinted at what mine is. Boy, this thing's such a cool device. I just remembered that the faceplate slides off of the NVIDIA Shield Portable, and you could have these alternative, like, stylized faceplates that you could put on there. They thought that was going to be such a big thing.
Style it your own. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Never. I'm surprised I just haven't lost it, you know, especially all the places I've taken this thing. Well, Brent, it's so dang nice to have you here.
Well, thank you. I realize it's just so much fun doing this when we're all in the same room. Mm-hmm. It makes it so much easier. I mean, we need more mattresses along the walls, I think, for like the trip season, but this feels great.
Yeah, it's nice.
I also realize we don't do this enough because there was a spider web on my microphone and I had to wipe
had to dust it
off. Yeah, this morning.
You don't remember? That was our guest last week.
Yeah, it was. We were pre-recording for Halloween.
Spider OS.
I feel like the NixCon buzz in the last couple of weeks has really gone to the next level. I think they're expecting somewhere around 300 people.
Wow.
Which is a lot for the first conference.
Yeah.
And I think NixCon EU was, or Europe, or whatever it was something like 200, 150, 200 people.
That's nice to see people showing up. I mean, and just in general, I think this, you know, this scale is going to be pretty banging. I know there's a lot of fellow content creators that we're looking forward to seeing, and then just a whole bunch of wonderful community members too.
I think it's going to be a little bit of a who's who at NixCon for the Nix community. That's going to be neat. Good buzz. I think there's going to be some stuff for us to really kind of observe from a Nix community standpoint. stuff.
We're going to feel like real Knicks novices. It's going to be great.
You know, gents, I feel like I've had that treat already from my time in Berlin. There's some cool people who show up at some of the hacker spaces there that I've been to. So I'm excited for you both to share in that experience, because from what I can tell, the folks who are kind of hacking away on Knicks-related stuff are just our kind of folk.
I think so. Except for this part. This part, it's me, right? It's me. Maybe it's a little bit of Wes, little bit of Brent. We're going to, there's something about us that just is broken. And
therefore, we break other things.
Yes.
Oh, I break lots.
So we are planning to make some pretty serious upgrades to the Linux Unplugged RSS feed as we go out the door this week. So we may potentially wreck your RSS feed or your podcast client's ability to download future episodes.
Please don't unsub.
Just so you know, this is coming up. We're flipping the Linux Unplugged feed to a Podcasting 2.0 feed. And we're going to try to do a swap in place so you don't have to change URLs or anything like that. What could possibly go wrong?
We'll find out.
Why are we doing this? Why do this? Are we crazy? Well, we plan to have 4 live-only Linux Unplugs on the next trip. We're not going to be publishing those anywhere. And we want to be able to deliver that in your Podcasting 2.0 apps you're already using. So you'll just see it in there as either pending or when it's live, and you can just tap in and catch us as we're on the live on the 12th, the 14th, the 15th, or the 17th. Assuming everything works with the feed and the live streams, we're going to put those live streams to good use to help inform our coverage, which will inevitably be in the Linux Unplugged on the 17th. And we're going to have a new streaming front end on the web with a new test chat experience. I don't know if it'll be – well, it should be already, but it's all kind of coming together at the same time. So there's a lot of moving pieces. And we're going to test this new chat experience to see if we just draw in more folks. And if it becomes something that's popular, well, then we'll probably work on getting bots and all that kind of stuff in there. We'll see. The back end is going to be all Podcasting 2.0 RSS feeds and lit. So it'll be audio and video all in the RSS feed. So you got to get a new podcasting app and you're set.
Help us test it.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Because this is something new for us. It's using some really, really slick stuff that Wes has built behind the scenes. Wes gets a round of applause. He's a legend this week.
I think we should save the applause after it works.
All right. That's true. All right. That's a very good point. But it's pretty exciting. It's a pretty big change. If everything goes right, you just all of a sudden we'll start getting new features in your podcast app one by one as we turn them on, starting with live support, which will be great.
You know, Chance in the chat room here asks a good question. Are we going to test our website ahead of time to make sure it works? And I never even thought of that. But
There shouldn't be any changes on the website. All that will still be getting fed the way it always gets fed. So the show, because they're all going to just be using the same back-end URLs and everything. So all that should still work. JBLive.tv should still work.
Trigger a scrape after we're done swapping things over if we think it's working.
Yeah. Long-term, if this setup works, we'll also use it for Texas Linux Fest and maybe Linux Fest Northwest. So this could be a model that we can reproduce. So please do help us test it. Go get yourself Fountain or Podverse or Castomatic. And I think Castomatic does lit. And join us and help us test it throughout the week.
Especially, maybe you've been... You haven't had a chance to try the live features in the apps yet because we are live other places on Sunday, but not this time.
Not this time. And of course, if you're going to be at scale, we'll be throwing a lunch Saturday the 16th at 1:30 p.m. at the Yard House. We'd love to have you there. And we also have that scale matrix chat room. And we have some more fest stuff later in the show, but let's get into our first topic this week. So each one of us is bringing a topic. And Brentley, we're going to see what you have for the class this week.
Yeah, I hesitated a little bit on this one because I feel like it's maybe more of a ask the class what's going on. I need some suggestions here. But I've been revamping my productivity systems recently. And it's mostly because I realized that being a freelancer for so long, I just kind of like get to work whenever I feel inspired and whenever, usually it's late at night, as Wes knows very deeply.
You had a lot of inbuilt flexibility because you didn't have to really collaborate with anyone or, meet any deadline beyond the deadlines you set for yourself, right?
Yeah. So, that worked really well for me, especially as a creative person. But these days, doing the Nextcloud thing, it turns out I need to be predictably productive, which is a thing I never had to do before. So I've been looking for some tools to help me do that. And one I came across actually feels quite inspiring to me. It's called Super Productivity, which is hopefully aptly named. And it's been changing my world a little bit. And for some of you who have been using productivity tools for a long time now, you might feel like, oh yeah, this is pretty basic, and I'm not sure what this would do for me. But, man, for me, it's like been a wonderful structure and a way to track my time. And so that's kind of what I was looking for. And I didn't think I would find any apps that I was happy with that weren't like hosted applications, because a ton of suggestions I've gotten were like, oh, use Todoist or use like, so I've gotten so many suggestions of those kind of products. But I came across Super Productivity, which is open source. And at first I was like, no. Like this isn't going to have enough traction to really, you know, be a stable application that's useful, right? But there's something like 150 contributors to this particular project. And
so you found something with a community.
Yeah, that got me kind of my ears up thinking, okay, wait a second, there might actually be something here. And so this application also does some cool stuff, like integrates GitHub and Jira and CalDAV Open Project and GitT issues into your task list. So you can have all these other systems that maybe your team works with or whatever, but you can bring those into your own productivity system and overlay them on top of, you know, your own personal tasks and things like that. And so some of the ideas in this project are really making a big difference in my own personal life. But also I just thought there's like these communities of these super niches and they're crazy active. And so I found it really interesting. The next best thing is that it is packaged up in Nix, which I was like, oh, I'm never going to be able to try this because I'm on Nix and I don't, you know, whatever. But
I don't have Snap packages installed.
Yeah, I was just that. So that blew me away and made me realize, oh, yeah, Nix packages does indeed have a lot of stuff, like way more than I expected. So there's no Flatpak of this yet. There's a Snap and a Deb. And, you know, a Nix package. And if you don't want to go that route, they also have like a web way of using
it. Yeah, a web app. A web app.
Also
that's nice.
Android clients and iOS clients. So it's just like,
ooh, it says F-Droid right here on the GitHub page.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Crazy mature. And so I've been using it for about a week now, and it's made a big difference for me, at least in learning how to be more stable in my productivity, which is the whole point. But the question for me then becomes, what do you guys use? Like, Wes, you've got a whole ton of like daily jobby job things you got to track. Do you have any productivity system? I would imagine maybe for those of you who've been, you know, having to solve this kind of problem for a couple decades, maybe you're using things like, I don't know, a note system that you have tweaked for just exactly what you need. So I feel like I'm on the start of this journey. I'm looking for advice on what's working for
you.
You
know, Brent, there's things I do like about this. Doesn't require an account. That's nice. Yep. You know, a lot of these things that do this kind of level of stuff, they require an account. The integration with Jira, GitHub, GitLab, and GitT, it's also
that
really
nice.
That
makes me curious. Yeah.
You know, so that means if you close something out on GitHub, it could be accounted for in here. Also, the way they do time boxing seems particularly useful for somebody like you and the way you work.
Syncs with Nextcloud on the back end, which is a nice thing. It can do syncing in a few different ways in different places. So,
do you have a task manager, Wes?
I might just have to install this to see if it's like one less time I actually have to open Jira up.
So I have zero experience with things like Jira, but yeah, if it can help you, that'd be interesting.
Try to keep it that way, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of have a few different methods. There's always the, there's a markdown file that I have open in Vim. That's,
I called it.
That's a lot of it. I have been playing with Logseqs has some time tracking functionality built in and some plugins if you want to kind of take it beyond that. So I use that for some things, though I find the like actual note-taking part more useful for me. And then for personal projects, I've had a Todoist subscription for a while, which I don't use a ton of, but can be nice, especially just for the mobile interface. So I can, mostly honestly to track down some groceries I want to buy or, keep track of like, oh, make sure you renew the car tabs. But
what I like, so Brent, what you kind of have here with Super Productivity is it's more than just a to-do app. Yeah. It's a time slicing app where you can slice your time up to specific things that you can focus on and then track your progress there and break those tasks up into a time slicing fashion, which seems like a very handy way to approach a to-do app.
Seems especially useful maybe if you were in like a contracting situation where you had stuff like billable hours, you really did need to account for like what happened in that day.
Yeah.
I see too, there's like break reminders and anti-procrastination feature. Yep. I'm also, I do like the Pomodoro method. It's got one of those built in. Nice.
Yeah, I've been kind of seeing it as not just a to-do list, but as a structure that I can just throw myself into. And it's like already all these best practices are sort of integrated into the software instead of me, you know, having to pull these mm-hmm. or have the discipline to integrate these into my own little strategies every single day. It's like there's just the structure that I can be thrown into and I have no choice but to just adhere to them. And it actually is super helpful for someone like me who's just trying to figure this stuff out for the first time.
It's the old, I'll start making blog posts just as soon as I finish developing my personal blogging.
Right. Yes. Yes. I like that it has, you know, app for every platform. It's got a Snap as well if you want to install it via Snap. It's in the AUR. Like you said, it's Nixed.
Oh, it looks like there's a Docker container available too.
There you go. So this is I think, a really nice, it's MIT licensed. So I think this is a really solid contribution. I like this a lot. Kind of like a next level productivity app. I'll just, for what I use, I think it's called task.org.
Oh, yeah.
And I use the Nextcloud as a backend feature. And it works pretty much like 90% of the time. I'll use that. And then every now and then I'll use like a bespoke to-do app like Todoist or something for like a project.
Mm-hmm.
And like I just use the app for that project.
Sometimes it is nice to have like, I know I just pull over here. There's no other clutter to distract me. I could go right to that.
But maybe super productivity fixes that in the way it can time box things. Perhaps.
Is it designed around like a single user, or like if, say, JB had an instance, could we all be using it?
That's a really good question. From what I can tell, it is single user, but that's a great question.
Collaborative tasks are always sort of a more advanced feature, but very.
But you can pull in like CalDAV systems and stuff like that. So if we're
using
that
GitHub,
as a...
If we did some sort of GitHub-based flow. Mm-hmm.
So I think if you rely on some of these backends, that might be totally an option.
Hmm. That's pretty slick and free. How do they make it? Do you know how they're making money as a company?
Like, I don't.
Do they have a hosted version?
It's a great question.
I guess they've got this.
Didn't
web
even
app.
Look for that because
I don't see. I don't see anything but the web app, but I don't see how you pay for that. And you know they have that hosted web app, but I don't know. This is an area too where I would love to solicit some feedback from the audience on if they have a task manager that's just enough for them. Because I'm looking for something that is totally inclusive like this, but also. My go-to has always been a lean, mean task manager for a particular project.
I do see they have they are enabled with GitHub sponsors. So, you know, if you do find it useful, maybe take a look at that.
Nice. And again, it's super productivity. We will put a link to that in the show notes so that way you can find it nice and peasy. Determinant.systems/unplugged. Yeah, Determinant.systems/unplugged is a sponsor of your Unplugged program, and they are the builders of the best Nix installer, including MDM support and SCIF mode. With more than 20,000 installs a day, they have also that advanced binary caching with sophisticated access controls that make using Nix at the enterprise possible, and team collaboration tools that you're just going to love because they fit into your existing DevOps workflow. And they've also created a plethora of open source tools and documentation for the Nix community. They really are a great resource. And above all, they've created FlakeHub.com, the all-in-one platform for secure, compliant, and transformative Nix development. You can bring Nix to work the way you've always wanted with FlakeHub.com. If you go to determinant.systems/unplug, you can register for the private beta, get secure, compliance-friendly Nix, and all the support you need. So you got to go to determinant.systems/unplugged. We'll have a link in the show notes. Determinant Systems is prioritizing Flake stability. That means you get a reliable foundation for your development. Plus, with Determinant Systems, you're always ahead of the curve with their development. You can gain access to new Nix features specifically designed for enterprise success. And FlakeHub provides custom solutions and enterprise-grade Nix support built to handle the needs of even the largest corporations and their compliance requirements. FlakeHub empowers you to secure your Nix environment while still enjoying the full potential and utility inside your team. And the great thing is, you're not going to have to learn a whole bunch of new tooling. It fits in with your existing DevOps workflow. It's the only SOC 2 certified platform for Nix, and it delivers a low-friction Nix development experience you've always wanted for a team. So go bring Nix to work the way you've always wanted, FlakeHub.com. Go register for the private beta and get that compliance-friendly Nix and support at determinant.systems/unplugged. That's where you go to sign up and to support the show. It's determinant.systems/unplugged. And a big thanks to Determinant Systems for sponsoring the Unplugged program. Determinant.systems/unplugged.
Now, Chris, since I've been here at the studio, I feel like I had a little bit of a hint of what your topic would be. I think I know what Wes's is in the area of. It feels like you two have been secret working on a project for maybe the last week or two. But I don't know what that is.
It might just be one that's going to benefit you, too.
Yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, tell us about it.
Yeah, and it is true. For about the last three Sundays after Linux Unplugged, Wes and I have stayed very late.
Negligently, so.
Oh, no.
Working on a project. You know, because we have some infrastructure bits and pieces, and we want to move them. And one of the things that we're starting with is one of the more challenging ones is, you remember January of 2022, when we first started doing Boost, we deployed our own local Umbral Bitcoin node.
Which kind of this, right, all-in-one application, Docker Compose under the hood, but you get a slick dashboard and a bunch of web apps and stuff to install.
And then everything that you install via their quote-unquote app store is really a Docker container. We've all seen these systems out there.
With a whole bunch of scripts that you occasionally have to troubleshoot under the hood.
And the more you use systems like this, you go, gosh, I'd just rather be just running the core applications myself. And this seemed like a perfect thing to nix. Could we nix this system and just get a very specific box that is an MVP that just runs really reliable, but then take that as a model that we could then deploy for Brent and myself and Wes, or any of the listeners could go grab and deploy their own system. And you could swap in the Bitcoin daemon for anything else, you know, Samba, you know, whatever it is, Plex. It's really about prescribing a system that gets built the way you want and creating your own custom, in our case, you know, Bitcoin node, but it could be really anything.
And, you know, Umbral had been pretty great. I think it allowed you to, like, play and explore the ecosystem and kind of mix and match, like, oh, I just want to try this app for a bit without committing to it. But, you know.
Well, now we know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been a while. We're pretty invested in the Boost. We're seemingly only going to be more so. And one of the things is, right, you can run it locally. We all want to. I wasn't super thrilled about setting up Umbral in my house.
We all want to self-host our own nodes because you can, but we don't need that solution anymore. We want something really a little more almost appliance-like.
Enter Nix Bitcoin, which I think you first directed us at from the Fort Nix project on GitHub. It's a collection of Nix packages and NixOS modules for easily installing full-featured Bitcoin nodes with an emphasis on security.
And I've heard about this on and off, but where I realized there was something serious here is when I was visiting El Salvador, there is a school of college kids, or a class of college kids, about 40 kids, and they were all working on creating self-hosted point-of-sales terminals for small businesses in El Salvador. And the first thing they tried, the first distro they tried was Debian, but they had issues every time it came to support and reproducibility of the problems. Like, they would try to troubleshoot back at the home office or the classroom, whatever. They'd have problems reproducing that. So then they moved to Ubuntu, and then they moved to Arch, and they continued to have the same problem. And so then the professor said, all right, you guys just go figure out what's going to work best. And whatever you figure out works best, we're going to just put that on a piece of hardware, and that's what we're going to send out to everybody. So they tried Silverblue, and they tried all these different things. And then the last thing they tried was Nix. And they used the Nix Bitcoin project. And then it started solving all of their problems they're having, all these little edge cases and configuration things they needed. And then they could also start reproducing problems back in the classroom, make a fix, ship it to the customer, and get the point of sales device working in a couple of hours. And so they came to their professor and they said, we think we should go with Nix Bitcoin. And he said, what the hell is Nix?
You want to go with what weird niche distro that we have to support now?
And so they gave him a little presentation and they sold him on it. And now there is this piece of hardware, they call it the MyBonk, that is in El Salvador, and you get other places too, that's all Nix Bitcoin, and it's all prescribed for this point of sales setup.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we thought, that seems like a pretty reasonable approach for us.
It also kind of felt like a nice version of, I mean, it's not quite a Will It Nix segment, but I think it's in that spirit. But it was interesting because, you know, our last time around, we were doing our Nix Cloud setup. Well, that had a module that was just right in Nix packages. And I think most of us have experience using, you know, pretty straight NixOS. And there's so much stuff in Nix packages that pretty much everything we need has been there. But Nix Bitcoin, it's its own repo. It's its own flake. It's a whole other, I mean, it all leverages NixOS technology, of course, but, you know, it's its own thing. And we have to figure out how to apply that.
Yeah, it's sort of outside the standard module system. So we have to figure out how to bring it in and then figure out which bits of it we wanted.
Yeah, how to get everything to play nicely together. But, so far it's been pretty nice. I mean, you got to go get the flake or however you choose to do it. They've got instructions in the README. Bring that in, but then you just make, you know, in your NixOS configuration, suddenly you've got a bunch more modules and services available that Nix Bitcoin exports. So, you know, you do services.bitcoind.enable equals true, and boom, you've got a Bitcoin daemon running. Now, you still got a way to go sync the blockchain, but
yeah,
you have a nice reproducible setup. They've got a lot of apps already, you know, stuff like the mempool. They've got Ride the Lightning. They've got, Liquid support, Lightning Loop. We found a lot of the stuff that we wanted from Umbral,
but a lot.
Not everything.
Yeah. And the goal here is to have something that we can, again, say, okay, Brent, here's your file. Use this file, and now you have a working system. You can imagine this with an IMAP server, right? Here's your file. You run this, and now you have a working system.
We don't have to spend an afternoon with you, like, trying to get it all up. Oh, yeah, first I installed this package over here, and then I'll make sure you change that config setting.
Right. None of that. It's just ready to go. And then the other thing is you're safe on upgrades. You know, you're really pretty much set. Unless there's a bug or a regression introduced upstream by the software maker, it's going to be such a more solid upgrade process than one of these pre-built systems that's managing all these containers that has to like do a self update and then do a Docker Compose pull and, you know, do all these things that under the hood that can sometimes go wrong and sideways and it just hangs. You don't have to deal with any of that.
Right. Instead, you've got like a flake with pins in it, right? You can roll back if anything goes wrong. It's all in Git.
So what happens, Wes, when not everything is packaged up as a module, which we did run into?
Yeah. Okay. So for the booth specifically, there's this great app from the Podcasting 2.0 folks called Helipad. And Chris, you turned us onto this as well. And it's super helpful, especially during live streams, because it just pops up and makes that fun pew sound.
Yeah,
and
it's like a real-time dashboard.
Yeah, it shows us live boosts coming in. But it wasn't packaged in Nix Bitcoin. So we thought, okay, well, we're going to need Helipad. And actually, just a couple days ago, they finally merged a long-standing issue and pull request to add a fancy settings page and webhooks. Which, pretty killer, I think, for a lot of folks, because you can get Helipad running, talking to your Lightning Daemon, and then export that, you know, anywhere else. Have it send you messages in Slack or Element or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So this was an application we wanted to have on our systems for all of us, each one of us, but it wasn't available by the Nix Bitcoin project. So we had to come up with a way where we could package it ourselves that, again, would be reproducible for everybody that uses this afterwards.
Yeah. You know, we had a lot of options. Because it's designed to run on Umbral, it's already packaged as a Docker container. So that's definitely one option.
Yeah, just use a Docker container.
It's also a Rust app, so it's pretty minimal. We could probably just download the binary and run it on NixOS, and it would probably work just fine. You basically just need the little webroot folder with all the static assets and a working binary for your system, and it should work. But neither of those sounded as much fun as trying to make it first class. Like, what if we wanted to fit into this lovely little Nix Bitcoin ecosystem?
And we want to be able to configure some of the parameters. And again, we want the co-host to be able to run this without having to go like set up a Docker container separately.
And that turned out to be a lot simpler than I think either of us really hoped for. I mean, just to get started, much like Go and a few other languages, Nix has great support for Rust. You do need to have like a cargo.lock file available, but they have a build Rust package function. So you kind of just go in there.
Nix does.
Yeah, totally. Rust platform, build Rust package.
Oh, sweet.
So here, you know, basically you tell it like, okay, the name is Helipad. Here's the version I want, which usually corresponds to like a tag in Git that you're going to go download. You point it to literally fetch from GitHub, right? Go grab it from the podcast index, grab the Helipad repo. And that's about it. We did have to figure out, you know, you got to figure out like what kind of build inputs and native build inputs. I don't know why, but I put in a little work to see that it would work on Darwin as well. Old Mac OS, so that's possible.
That's great. It's random. But, you know, now essentially the GitHub repo is our package repo, right? So when they update and they release there, we'll get the new version.
Yeah, we will have to do a couple updates because you got to go, you know, there's hashes in here to make everything reproducible. So you got to go through and when they really do a new release, we'll decide, are we ready to update? And then we can update that package to pull in the latest one. So that worked pretty well. And we got ourselves a little binary that was built and runnable. But that's only half the battle, really. And probably not even half the battle, because that just kind of gets us in the Nix store a Helipad executable that we could run. And we tested that, and that was working. But then you're going to also have to go download the webroot and statefully stick that somewhere.
Yep.
And that just didn't sound that fun.
And you
fun.
Need to get it to start.
Yes. And this was one area where, personally, I'd had like a little more experience with Nix, because I've tried packaging a couple things myself just for personal projects. And so I'd seen like, okay, you can build the package. You got it available. For a lot of stuff, that's enough.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What about having a whole gosh darn NixOS module?
Right. Why not?
Because that's how everything's done with Nix Bitcoin.
Right.
And I think ultimately we'd love, I don't know if it upstreams or not, but it would be nice for it to take advantage of the Nix Bitcoin infrastructure and sort of seamlessly slot in a mixed that. Because we really liked a lot of the patterns that that gave us. So I thought if we could have the exact same thing for Helipad.
And this is something that a lot of other folks running their own node are going to want eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially folks interested in value for value and boosts and stuff.
So following their convention, so sort of just it just sort of slots right in if people are already using Nix Bitcoin.
Yeah. And that was so great because, you know, there are a lot of NixOS modules out there, but a bunch of them are kind of integrated in with Nix packages, and it's just a lot to sort through. I found it super helpful that Nix Bitcoin is totally open source. I could just go read some of the modules for the apps we were already using and then kind of copy that pattern and be like, oh, right, that's how they do that. So for instance, right, we've got a, you know, a big array attached to the thing that we're running that's going to store the blockchain and stuff. We wanted to make sure that all the state wasn't going to be on the main OS disk. It was going to be over there. All the other services come with like a data dir option so you can make sure it goes and points in it. You know, hey, all the app data live over here.
Just to emphasize that point, this is what makes it so nice, is in that config that we're setting up, we're setting the data dir directory in there. So when these applications get set up, they just are configured out of the box for our data to live where we want. And this stuff is so nice. And when we give it to Brent, he just changes that path to whatever his data directory is. And all of the app, you don't have to go configure each application individually.
Right. Or you could mount your thing to the same folder. You have a lot of flexibility.
But anyways, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I want to underscore how freaking nice that is.
Well, and it was neat to see how it was done, too. So a bunch of these, they use systemd temp files under the hood, which is a sort of facility for systemd to create temporary files. But it turns out they actually don't need to be that temporary. So you can create directories. You can also create symlinks. So there was stuff in there that we could set up. So Helipad works the same way. It automatically sets up its own storage location wherever you tell it. I got it configured so you can, you know, in Nix, you can tell it all the options you want for Helipad, and then that spits out your configuration file into the Nix store, and then it symlinked that into the root where this thing's running. I mean, this is all very MVP. We basically got it to the stage of like, hey, look, it looks like it works. And, you know, in our actual node config, we could just say like services.helipad.enable equals true. Surely lots of stuff to improve, but it was really fun, and I thought it was a nice way to go about learning this stuff in kind of a safe environment. And a slightly simpler environment.
Well, and the opposite of a, like, and I don't mean to, like, hate on, like, the FreeNAS type stuff or the platforms that let you deploy, you know, a bunch of apps from an app store. But what we get with this is we're building it up instead of building it down. And so we're adding individual things that we need as we need them, and nothing more. And to me, for something that you want to run reliably, securely for a long time, that's always, always a better way to go. If it's more minimal and you just bolt on as you need stuff using a standard way that is totally scalable, it's just going to make for a much – I mean, these basically are set up once and done.
It's neat, too, because the Nix Bitcoin stuff, obviously security is fairly important on your node, right? You really don't want folks getting on there or, you know, stealing your bag. So there's a bunch of options in Nix Bitcoin and stuff that they just use. So – like when you're setting up the systemd service for Helipad or for whatever, there's some neat options in there like read-write paths or read-only paths. Mm. And basically you can tell systemd, when this service, I'd like it to have this working directory, and then it can only read from these paths and it can only read and write to these other paths. So you can tell it like, okay, you can read from Etsy, you can write to this one dir, and elsewise, you don't get to see squat.
Yeah, that's nice.
The one last part about this that was really nice is, you know, we were doing this at the studio, on a particular machine here, but I didn't really want to like do all the testing and dev on that machine. You know, there's Tailscale, there's Access, it's all fine, but I just wanted to play with it a bit on my laptop as I was trying to get the module to work. And I wasn't even using NixOS. I was using KDE Neon at the time because we were, you know, getting ready to check out the new Plasma. Yeah. I installed Nix on there, and then you're able to not only build the whole NixOS module, but then in the Flake, I just added a NixOS configuration that was pulling in the module I was developing. And then from that, it'll just build you a virtual machine image, which it uses the Nix version of QEMU to run right on my Neon. So I didn't have to install any VM stuff. Wow. Into it. It was just like
doing this on top of an Ubuntu base.
And then suddenly I'm in a NixOS VM and I can see like, oh, did my systemd service render out like I wanted it to?
Yeah.
That's so neat.
That is so neat. And then like now once you get it working, you go put it on the box.
And then it worked. It just worked.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's the other thing is you move to a totally different system from that, you know, temporary VM system, drop another box, reload, and it works.
And you don't even have to like bring anything. You know, I basically just pushed it to GitHub and then went on the box in the studio and said, hey, pull in the Flake from this GitHub repo and rebuild your system.
Can we just like soak in that for a second? just put it up on Gitapult and it's like reproduces it and it works. And this is where it just seems inevitable that if you have a mission critical production app, you're going to want to be able to have this kind of flexibility and, you know, prescribed deployment.
And as with everything, there's a ton of ways to do this. Obviously, a bunch of this stuff you can do.
Sure. Oh, yeah, there always is.
Yeah. But I think there's something about the power of combining all these things in one system and some of the ergonomics of Nix, like that just built-in virtual machine setup and that you can do it on any system without really installing much besides Nix, really kind of lowered the barrier to entry and I think upped the reward a bit.
Hmm. Now we just have to figure out how to do a full migration. But the thing that I've liked about it is we've essentially each week solved something. And as we do that, we kind of unlock that knowledge, and then we can build on top of that. So week one, we weren't installing custom apps.
No, we were just getting the darn thing to figure, like, how do we, is the Lightning Daemon working?
Right.
Is the thing synced? We don't know.
But it's like you solve a problem, and you're always moving forward. You can always build on top of what you've done. It's not that that isn't how it typically works, but it really feels concrete. It's like, okay, we've solved this. Now we build on top of that because that's a finished problem, and we can now do this next thing. And then the next week, we solve the next problem.
Yeah, and I think it's nice just to, you know, understand that, like, yes, the barrier to entry is high, and maybe you don't need to build your own custom apps, but, you know, Alex has been off contributing stuff to Nix packages. Once you get over a couple of those humps, you can really start bringing whatever you want right along with you, just like you can with Nix.
Okay, first of all, this is amazing. We've been dreaming about this for, like, what, a year or two? So kudos to you guys for doing that, and hearing the details of it is awesome. I do have a question about Nix Bitcoin having its own repo. I'm curious about why that is, why the project feels like they have to have their own repo versus just using the standard Nix repo. Is there a particular reason?
You know, I'm not really sure, but I think part of it is probably you can just, you know, uncouple the development. And Nix packages development seems to go pretty fast, and there's, you know, all kinds of reviews and awesome systems, but I think the stuff might be just different enough, and they might also have some different sort of defaults with eyes to security and Tor integration and stuff.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, there's some defaults that they change. And I think you're going to see more of this. I think Nix Bitcoin and Nixified AI are kind of the beginning of this, but instead of distros, you know, where we'd see spins of distros in the past that were like a studio distro or whatever, you're going to just see these communities that build up around Nix and create like the Nix Bitcoin project. And you're going to have Nix, probably there maybe already be a Nix studio project. We should look into that. But, you know, I think this is going to become like the next wave. Instead of seeing, I hope, maybe this is me projecting I hope of mine, but instead of seeing new distros pop up all the time, which does feel like it's slowing down, you're going to see takes on Nix that are kind of like a, you know, a community that comes together with a very specific goal, and they create this. And then you just, I mean, it starts as just a basic Nix install, and then it became a Nix Bitcoin install.
Right. We just really just added another input to our Flake and then turned on some more services.
Yeah.
And I think that, too, helps. You know, obviously before you could do all the same stuff, but the Flake integration really takes the costs of having it as its own repo down a lot, I think. So you get the benefits of having it sort of uncoupled, play with it, especially as early development. You know, you don't want to have to – you're making lots of rapid changes, and then it's still easy for folks to get it.
I mean, I'd love to see Nix email. It's this for an email server, right? Nix image or whatever. Just easy, all these things where the community comes together and they just build this, because there's so many ways to solve these problems. And the nice thing about it, these modules being on GitHub, is you can just look at what they're doing and you can adopt some of it or all of it. Or
right. You could bring it in with the Flake, or you could just copy the file, right? And then have your own module locally until you're ready to do something else.
But we're all starting from a much better place. And, it gets you up and going so much faster.
But this is kind of what Docker is trying to do, right? But it feels like maybe this is the new way to solve those problems.
Well, here you're going all the way into the application, too. So not only are you deploying on the actual host, but you're going into configuring all the way into the application.
And it's kind of all integrated, too. So it's like, you know, one of these services might configure the MySQL, that service that exists in NixOS already. But if you want to then further tweak that, that's all right in the same area. So you can access that directly without having to go to some other file. It's all integrated into one holistic config.
Collide.com/unplugged. Now, I bet you have heard me talk about Collide before. I think it's kind of a secret weapon. Would have kept me in IT probably for even longer. But did you hear the good news? Collide's been acquired by 1Password. That's actually pretty big news, since these two companies really have a very similar focus in the security industry, solutions that put users first. Now, for over a year, Collide Device Trust has helped companies with Okta ensure that only known secure devices can access their data. They do this with some really cool tooling, and a single-pane dashboard for all your machines. And now, they're doing it even more with 1Password. So if you've got Okta and you've been meaning to check out Collide, now is a great time. Collide comes with a library of pre-built device posture checks, too. But of course, you can write your own custom checks as well for just about anything you can think of, including your Linux fleet, all without the requirement of an MDM, the dreaded MDM. What does a Linux fleet do? Well, you don't need to worry anymore with Collide. Also, you know, really handy, I know, for contractor devices, where you can't necessarily just install software on somebody else's computer. And really, every BYOD device, every phone or laptop that happens to roll into your company now. Collide solves that, and now they're doing it with 1Password. So go check them out. They're only getting better. Go to collide.com/unplug to learn and to watch that demo. It's a great way to support the show, too. That's KOLIDE.com/unplugged. Collide.com/unplugged.
Okay, now I think we come to Chris. I have some hints at what you've been doing, but actually now I'm starting to question myself. I don't know. So what do you got for us?
Yeah, I used you as a tester this morning to just like check, like, do you think this is as cool as I do? Because I think this is really cool. I got to give a shout out to our buddy Alex who turned me on to this. And it is a portable game console called the RS36S. And it's focused on retro games. You can find it for somewhere between $30, $60, or if you get the full kit, about $85. It is really focused on emulators. So you've got a whole list, you know, everything you could really think of that is of any kind of retro era. And that's great for me. Nintendo, PSP, all those Game Boys, all that kind of stuff. Where it really stands out is its size. It's shaped like kind of like a little bit fatter of a Game Boy. And its screen. The screen is small, but it is a IPS OCA brilliant screen. It is – here, I'll turn it on.
I did not expect that.
It's
somehow it looks like a Game Boy, so I thought it would just be like a
crappy
black and white screen.
I know, right? It really seems like it would just be a crappy screen, but it is not. It's only 640 by 40, but again, when you're playing these ROMs, that's all you really need. It has an ARM 64-bit CPU in here, 1.5 gigahertz, so it's, you know, plenty fast for playing these. It has joysticks on it as well, which is really nice, neat. A gigabyte of RAM.
Oh.
And check this out. This one has dual TF card slots. So I've got two SD cards in here. One is the OS, so you could reflash that, and one is the ROMs. There's about 1,000 ROMs this thing comes with. ROMs that I've never even been able to find online. There's no way this thing's going to be for sale for very long. It's loaded with ROMs.
So what's the OS like?
The OS is great. So it's called Arc OS, which is based on Ubuntu 1910.
Oh, of course it's Linux powered. But I wasn't sure if it was some embedded thing.
No, it's Linux.
Okay.
It's Linux, buddy. It's got two USB-C ports on the bottom, one for charging and one for actually getting computer access too. So you can actually get to it. The battery life's fantastic. This morning was the first time I've recharged this thing in like 2 days. I think they call it like 8 hours.
Linux device with the best battery at this point.
Yeah. Well, I got it so that way you boys wouldn't be fighting in the back seat so I could keep you distracted on our way down.
Oh, you only got one of them?
Well, one of you have to, you know, just look out the window, I guess. You can share it. It's great. It's got a little speaker in there, a little 8-watt, you know, capacity, a little 8-watt speaker. So it's not going to do any, it's not going to blow you away. But for, again, for these 8-bit and 32-bit and 16-bit games, it's really not bad. And the Arc OS UI is really fantastic. I was just looking to try to – you can actually – oh, yeah. I'm going to do this live, but you can actually open up the back, and you can take out the battery, it looks like. And you can actually – look at that. You could actually – yep, you could swap the battery out.
Oh, that's nice.
It's got a removable little lithium battery pack. It looks like 11.1 watt-hour battery pack.
That looks pretty standard, like you could just buy something
milliamp.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a real standard little 3,000 milliamp.
I didn't save my game.
Oh, sorry, Brent. Sorry. I have read by the community – I don't know if any of the audience out there has had experience, but I've read that the SD cards it comes with are very cheap and they don't last as long. So you might, if you get this.
Maybe get a premium one.
Yeah. And you can run it off one SD card if you partition it, or you can do the dual SD card thing.
So did you have to install the OS?
No.
Oh.
Comes with the games and the OS ready to go.
Wow.
And it's got a UI specifically done for arcade. Boots right up, plays the games. It's got great controls. They feel really good. What'd you think of the physical controls?
I was really impressed. Like, I picked it up, and I haven't played many of these Game Boy-style consoles, but it just came super naturally for a person who's played, like, Super Nintendo or those kind of controllers. And what stood out for me was the quality of the joysticks.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah.
I'm going to put it back together so Wes can try it.
And
I think
also,
I plugged the battery in.
What surprised me was the triggers in the back.
Yeah.
Once you find out that there are triggers back there, they were brilliant.
Yeah, it's a nice touch.
And so for the size, like, okay, it, you know, it's tempting to compare it to a Steam Deck. But for the size of this little thing that you could just shove in your front pocket.
You could put it in your front pocket. Yeah.
It's like brilliant. I was really, really impressed. But it's the screen that stood out the most.
It's great if you just want some kill some time travel gaming or something like that. Oh, the battery might be dead. I just turned it on, but then it turned off. But I don't know if it'll boot. The battery, we were playing it this morning, and then we didn't charge it much.
So for like a sense of performance and scale, like what, you know, what kind of modern, what's the like emulated system limit that this thing can do?
That's a good question. I haven't really pushed it far because I'm so much of the classics, but it does have a PC game emulator on there too. It feels faster than I hate to say it, my beloved Shield Portable. Because it's, you know, it's Linux, it's less that it has to do, it's not Android with, you know, the Play services and all that kind of stuff. It's USB-C charging, and my Shield is micro, so, you know, that's nice, too, to actually have a USB-C device. I got this one for $80 off Amazon, but then I went and looked, and I found it on Alibaba, or not, AliExpress, for, I want to say, $60 U.S. greenback. Oh, $48.
That's not bad.
With the games. With the games. $48 with the games in there, and you got yourself.
That seems wrong.
There's just no way this thing lasts, right? No way. And I love that it's Linux. So I Alex showed it to me. I was like, oh, yeah, it's brilliant, Alex. I'm getting myself one of those.
Okay, so it is old man tested, clearly, but has it been kid tested?
Yeah, the kids like it. You know, that's the thing is some of those old games hold up. Mm-hmm. Some of the good ones hold up, like the Mario stuff and all that really does hold up. Mario Kart's on there, you know.
I played Star Fox, Chris, and you picked it up and you're like, oh, wait a second. This looks really good on here.
Yeah, again, the screen quality is so top notch. That it gives life to your old games, and they're just vibrant.
Yeah, my brother has a Wii that has been sort of hacked to have a bunch of these emulators on it.
Yeah,
and that's what we rely on every Christmas when we spend far too many hours, you know, playing games for 30 hours straight. But I have to say, the experience on this device was better.
You think so?
Oh yeah, it was felt smoother, more reliable. Like I know on his system. Because you're trying to fight it into like a Wii interface is really clumsy, but also the emulators, like they don't have all the right memory or whatever to allocate it. And so it was a clumsy experience compared to this thing, which the menu to go through the games was just really nice.
Yeah, it plays a little theme song for like the most popular game from that console, and it's completely branded. It's got the Super Famicom in there. It's got the Super Nintendo. So it's even got like some of the variations of the consoles that maybe didn't ship in your country and stuff like that. And you can try like a different country's version of the ROM. They'll have multiple editions of the ROMs on there and things. So they have stuff that as a kid I knew was out there but could never get my hands on too, which is kind of a neat thing now.
But then playing it for like, I don't know how long I was playing it because I lost myself, but probably 15, 20 minutes at least, right?
Yeah,
Chris?
Dude. And, I took a long shower.
That's what I'll say on air. And I just found it super responsive too. Like I really quickly, even though I'm not used to this style of gaming console, just kind of got lost in the game. And a game that's actually quite old. And success, I would say.
Well, I'm curious to know what your thoughts are. I was really surprised the amount of controls. You know, you got your standard D-pad on there. You got your SNES, you know, A, B, Y, whatever buttons on there and X or whatever it is. And then you've got the dual 3D joysticks plus the buttons on the back. Yet it's all kind of, at least in my opinion, with my hand size, it was all very reachable, all usable.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be, when you handed it to me, its biggest downside was ergonomics.
That's what I looked at. That's what I thought, too.
And, like, especially I thought, oh, geez, these buttons on the back, the triggers on the back.
You're going to be hitting them all the time or whatever, yeah.
It just seems like they're just sort of plunked on there and there's not much thought put to this. Like, they're even right angle, like, this isn't going to work. But then I started using it.
This is in the hand.
And I was like, oh, wait a second. I actually really like this.
What do you think, Wes? Using
I want a version of this that has the old cell phone style flip out keyboard or like slide out keyboard.
Yeah.
Because this screen, you could get some like serious remote sysadmin work done on this thing.
It's only 640 by 480, but it looks great. Yeah, I mean, there you go. I don't know if anybody's shopping for a device like that, but something you can throw in your front pocket or your laptop bag or something like that. Real easy to, you know, travel with like we're going to be doing. Just seems like a no-brainer. So again, it's kind of hard to find because it's just called the RS36S Retro Handheld Gaming Console. And that's it. You know, different places I've noticed come with different ROMs potentially too, so look for that. Make sure you get the one I came with. Came with the one I got off Amazon was a little bit more expensive, but it came with kind of a whole kit.
So you're saying the one you chose is better?
I don't know. Actually, don't know for sure, because I think you could probably find the one I got for cheaper. I just happen to know mine came with, you know, all the ROMs and stuff, and you're going to want that. There you go. Yeah, put it up to your mic there. Yeah, so that's the system menu. And then if you hit the down arrow, Wes, it'll switch between different emulators.
Oh, I was wondering about that. Okay.
Yeah, and then each one plays like a little tune and gives you a little themed menu or whatever. Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, Nintendo 64?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I know what I'm doing after the show.
Goldeneye?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
This is brilliant. I think, you know, I haven't bought...
I think Bass Hunter 64 is more Brent speed.
Hey, now. No, I just go outside my front door.
That's right.
I haven't bought a gaming console in a like decades.
Right.
And I am extremely tempted by this thing, actually.
Now, did you, I assume, but can you add your own, you know, if you've got a ROM file?
Oh, okay. 100%. Great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, what I really like about the dual ROM setup is you could just pop the game ROM out, leave the OS ROM going, and then just pop it back in. So Texas Linux Fest is, I'll put links, by the way, to the show in the show notes to that. Texas Linux Fest is approaching quickly after Scale. And
startlingly quick.
We had a community member reach out to us and offer to help bring us down to Scale. And I'm really excited by this.
You mean bring us down to Texas Linux Fest?
Oh, Texas Linux Fest. Yeah, sorry. I got everything running together right now. They're Cynary Cybersecurity, and they're based out of Texas. And they reached out. Donald is a longtime listener. He's been listening since like Linux Action Show with Matt.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. And he said, we'd love to get you guys down here. So they're going to help get Linux Unplugged down to Texas for the Texas Linux Festival, as they put it. And I'm, you know, and I think we're going to have a chance to go out to dinner with the Cynary guys and, you know, learn what they do and meet them too. So that should be really good. They're also contributing to Texas Linux Fest itself as one of the contributors and sponsors of Texas Linux Fest.
Oh, great.
So they're really, you know, you know how these stories go. They say they listen, we help them. I think they give us too much credit, but they wanted to, you know, return the value and send us down there. So you can check them out if you are looking for a cybersecurity company. It's scinary.com, cinary.com, and they're helping us get to Texas Linux Fest and go say hi to Donald. Really looking forward to that. We're still working through, like, do we have somewhere for Jupes down there that's near or in Austin? I've gotten a very generous offer outside of Austin, mm-hmm. but it's about, I think it's 20 miles. Not sure if that's a great idea for going to a conference every day. So we are looking for a place where we can park a big old RV for a little bit if you're listening and have something. And we'd love to get down there early for the eclipse too. And, you know, it's getting expensive. So if you haven't booked your travel yet, listeners, do it, because the eclipse is raising the rates, or book after the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be cheap. It's not going to be cheap. And I would imagine you got to look at that schedule closely, because I was looking at flying in a couple of days for the eclipse and the rates just skyrocket.
But just think about the barbecue. Think about the barbecue.
And now, as the French say, it is time for Le Boost.
Sure is. And VT52 is coming in once again. And he is our baller at 62,222 sats.
Hey!
And we all, I think, giggled when we saw this first link that he sent in. He says NixOS on FreeBSD, and he sends us a link. It is a thing, NixBSD.
NixBSD is an attempt to make a reproducible and declarable BSD based on NixOS.
You know what? What took him so long?
In theory, a lot of this work could be, you know, any BSD, but so far it's a FreeBSD focus. They've got a fork of upstream Nix that allows building packages for FreeBSD. There's a fork of Nix packages, and then there's NixBSD, which is basically the equivalent of NixOS. Seems like a nicely laid out project here. They've got a great README that kind of talks about, like, what is this thing and how likely is any of this to ever make it back upstream, which some of it seems like it could. Maybe there's hope.
And then he sends 60,000 sats to say, if Rust has its own cool soundbite, then is it perhaps time for Nix and NixOS to have its own? Maybe some ideas like a harmonica riff, maybe some chanting monks, or just yelling one of us. If you're unfamiliar, you can look for that on YouTube. Maybe something else. He's looking for suggestions, but he says we need a NixOS soundbite.
Something declarative. What's a declarative soundbite?
Oh, I have a question. How'd you come up with the Rust one?
Well, Wes hired a intern to run the soundboard, and he brought it in, and it was extremely inappropriate, but we'd paid the license, so we're keeping it, you know? So... There's always that.
Yeah, we fired the soundboard guy and kept all the clips.
Yeah, I mean, we paid for the clips, but we never paid the soundboard guy.
Hybrid sarcasm comes in with 42,000 sats.
The answer to the ultimate question.
From the podcast index, but I'm not seeing a message here.
Well, we appreciate that value and support, Hybrid. It's always nice when I see Hybrid check in. At least, you know, we know he's out there still. You know, if we don't hear from him, we start to worry a little bit.
Ensign Nix boosted in a total of 21,222 sats over two boosts.
B-O-O-S-T!
Using Fountain. Greetings from England. I'm a longtime listener, first-time booster.
Hello! Thank you.
Nix Unplugged. Oops, Linux Unplugged.
Okay, we deserve that.
Is my favorite technical podcast. So it's about time I support with some sats.
Hey-o! Thank you.
Regarding Fountain, I really want to use it with Android Auto, but the experience is not great for me. The tabs along the top show no items for every category. On the rare occasion as well, my content shows up, but it struggles to play, even if the episode has been downloaded. Also, need more characters per boost. I can't remember if you've done this before, but I'd love an episode on how the JB audio infrastructure is set up.
Ooh.
Specifically, how you got such good audio quality from remote participants. And is it Reaper doing all that heavy lifting? By the way, I use Borg with Borgmatic for backups and paperless NGX with Genius Scan on my phone. Chris, you were asking.
I'm going to write Genius Scan.
That's a new one to me. Yeah, I got to try that.
I'm going to write that down.
At NixCon. All right. We have a couple things going on here. So number one, Fountain.
Yeah.
Android Auto.
Not sure about the no items. That's a new one for me. So I'll report that. I mean, Nick's already seen these. But yes, that's new to me.
That's not your experience.
No, I was going to say we used it this morning, but I actually couldn't get my USB cable plugged in, so I didn't use it this morning.
Safety first.
I gave up. USB-A is such a bastard. But we'll follow up on that. Now, your question about audio quality and remote hosts, I mean, honestly, we have to give a lot of the credit to Drew.
Yeah,
a lot of it goes to Drew. We've hired a professional editor who's the best in the biz, so you know, he's got tooling and techniques that he's developed over the years.
I swear every time we ask him about it, he's found some new, better tooling that he's applied to. So the stuff just gets better and we don't have to do any work.
Yeah, we try to get good local quality audio and we try to do the best we can. But then Drew really comes in and saves the day usually. I joke with him that I call it running it through the wash.
Yeah.
When we send it to Drew, we run it through the wash because he just cleans it right up. Really appreciate you following up too on your backup strategies. If you do have the characters when you boost in to include how you're doing backups these days, we're keeping track of this. And the paperless NGINX and Genius Scan, that could be really, really good. I like that idea a lot. Thank you, Craig. Appreciate the support. Thanks for taking the time to get it all set up too. I know the initial setup is the tricky spot, but now that you've got it, love to hear from you.
I also realized here that this is sort of a postcode boost. There's a little location included here. Wes, you want to take this one?
Oh, I could not pronounce any of that except for the Weston part.
Weston Rhine, Oswestry, Shropshire.
Shropshire, 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 Shropshire.
Extra shrimp.
Shropshire. Yeah, I hope we got that right, Craig. Probably not. You know?
Is it even Craig? Is that the pronunciation? Who knows?
You know, I look at these names and I go, gosh, these are so hard to pronounce, but then go take a look at a few names on the Washington State map and try to pronounce those. They're just as wild. You know, you just get used to them. You grow up with them, and they just seem normal to you. Listener Jeff comes in with 2,500 sats. A little bit of a hot boost right there.
Coming in hot with the boost.
He says, okay, I'm finally testing out Fountain. Hey-oh, there you go. Good job. Now, I know some of you have had issues when importing OPML, because the reason I know this is I was talking to the Fountain team. And I'm like, you know, what are like the top issues?
Mm-hmm.
And seriously, one of the top problems that people have is OPML, because the different podcast apps, they follow the OPML standard, but they implement a little bit differently. So you just have all of these edge cases.
Come on.
I know. But Jeff, let us know how it works when we're doing the lit stream. You could be our on the boots ground tester. Okay. Be our lit
guy.
Sounds
good to me.
Jeff's going to be lit. Thank you, Jeff. Jordan Bravo comes in with 11,101 sats and says, this is for you, Brent. I tend to use my keyboard as much as possible when I'm using the computer. I've tried a lot of fancy ergonomic keyboards, but in my opinion, the absolute king, is the Glove 80, the Morgo. Is it expensive? Absolutely. But nothing else comes close in terms of comfort, quality, and features.
Wireless split ergonomic keyboard.
You know,
Ooh, this thing looks cool.
Glove is a great name for a keyboard. How have I not like thought of that?
Whoa. Yeah. Chris, this would be such an upgrade for you. You were saying just this morning your keyboard's starting to repeat characters and such. Maybe you need an upgrade.
It's like a multi-layer keyboard.
I also like this because it probably scares away, you know, anyone else from even trying to use your
machine. Nobody's like gonna you don't have to lock your screen anymore. Nobody else is gonna try.
IT approved.
So what's fascinating about this keyboard to me, the Glove 80, is that it's like I always forget, but it's concave or it's like, it looks like a skate park.
Mm-hmm.
That is the opposite of what I thought would be an ergonomic setup. I figured sure enough, you'd go the other way, like a dome over the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm loving this exploration of weird and wacky and wonderful keyboards. So
are you down for spending 399 US greenbacks? I mean, what is that even in Canadian?
It's too much.
Like $500 in Canadian?
Yeah, probably.
Woo, that's starting to be an expensive keyboard.
Well, if you break it down by hour of use,
well,
over time, I think you're doing pretty good.
What's the price per keystroke?
When's the last time you threw out a keyboard?
I still... never.
So, I think it's okay. I think it's going to be just fine to spend a little bit. You'll use it for a while.
Deleted boost in with 12,345 sats.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life!
I suspect the reason that the AI episodes don't hit that hard is that the Linux community is filled with people who are extremely independent. That makes them prone to being suspicious of cloud and, yes, AI. Even when done locally, I don't think AI would survive the digital doomsday or a government internet shutdown. I won't speak for everyone, but I'm close to buying an RV and just living off-grid.
Hey, is that a shot at me? Is that a shot at me?
Or a compliment? I don't know.
But wouldn't you want an all-answering, all-knowing local LLM in that RV to help answer your questions when you're off-grid? Like, imagine you hurt yourself or you got some sort of medical problem. Will they have these LLMs that are specifically trained around medical issues? And I find this to be fascinating.
Sure, it might hallucinate in a disease that doesn't exist, but you don't know anymore.
Or you have to argue that you're not actually seeking medical advice with it for 5 minutes before it gives you a straight answer. But I actually think there's something to the local. So one of the things I've been using a local – I've just been seeing how useful they are. And I tried out using an LLM to help me plan for scale. And I said – and what I did is I said, we're going to be doing several live shows. There's going to be three of us. We're going to need a mixer. We're going to need microphones. Give me a parts list of everything I need to pack that includes all of the cables and accessories that make all these things work.
Huh, Quartermaster IT. Hmm.
And it just gave me a itemized list. Okay, you're going to need the XLR cables. You're going to need this cable. You're going to need the power cable. This thing's a USB-C device. You're going to need a USB-C charger. You might want to bring a battery bank. And yeah, it's helpful, right? Because I was having a hard time getting my head wrapped around that problem. I didn't need to, you know, did it. Could I have done it without it? Absolutely.
But it's a little boost. And when it's local, when it's not sending your data somewhere, the cost to using it suddenly are a lot less.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think if you are skeptical, I think the point we were trying to make a couple episodes ago is there's utility here that we think is worth your time to learn more about. Don't stay ignorant to it, but you can do it without having to go live off the teat of a cloud service.
And let's maybe show that there are people who are interested in this stuff. So there's motivation out there to keep this developing before it all just turns to SaaS only.
Big one.
Well, user 4213-8438 with 10,051 sats kind of says the same thing. I definitely enjoy the episode about local AI, so please keep it coming.
Oh, is that quite the same thing? I think it's slightly different. I don't think the previous booster really enjoyed the episode, but I'm glad to know he did. That is good to get feedback on that. You know, Brent, they also mentioned in this boost that they've been running bKashFS.
Whoa.
A little bKashFS check-in, although they say they have to do like a manual mount at boot, due to some previous limitations, I think, with the VM they're using.
I think there's also, I know, you know, bKashFS does some weird fancy new stuff, and not all of the tools support the, like, if you have multiple disks and the way you have to specify that on the command line. But thank you for trying it and reporting back.
They have a question for us. They're looking for a new single board computer that could do maybe even local AI, run some VMs like Windows and Android, perhaps. Could do containers for some of that. And they'd like good Wi-Fi and Bluetooth with USB ports. They've looked at the Orange Pi 5, powerful but expensive, might struggle with battery life, Orange Pi 03, Raspberry Pi 02, the GPT Win 4, powerful but expensive there. They want something that is sort of between a small board computer and an Orange Pi 5 Plus or 03, and you know, something that's made powerful to run a few local services like AI, like local AI workloads. That's an interesting question. I don't know if there's anything besides... I mean, honestly, local accelerated AI? on a small box.
Yeah, it sounds tricky. Like quite a challenge.
I think you want a Mac Mini. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but
that doesn't always meet the budget requirement.
Yeah.
Though.
Could you do like something like an Odroid with a NVIDIA card or something in there that maybe it's not running at the full slot speed, but you don't need it since you're just doing offloaded compute? I don't know. Maybe somebody could help us in the right direction. I wouldn't mind building something like that myself.
One thing you could do is like offload your tasks, the AI tasks to a service provider that you trust.
Yeah.
That just like gives you GPU compute or something like that. That way, at least you don't need to have all of that on your single board computer. I don't know. That's an option.
Mm-hmm. The idiot you yell at comes in with a row of ducks. Oh, from Breeze. Neat. Okay, we're being linked to the OSS document scanner, which has been my go-to document scanner since using Graphene OS.
Okay, all right. So hearing from a Graphene OS user, very good. It's on IzzyDroid, Google Play, and on GitHub.
Updated 4 days ago.
Kind of just looks lean and mean. This kind of seems like maybe the obvious place to start. Not that paperless and Genius Scanner wouldn't be really good, but this is just an open source on-device document scanning app, which I've been looking for something to take pictures of receipts and whatnot when we're on our Scale trip and our Texas Linux Fest trip and we're trying to replace ScanBot. So if you have any recommendations, but this looks really good. OSS-Document Scanner. Writing that down.
And we'll have a link in the show notes.
Yes. Thank you very much for the boost, idiot, and for that link. Appreciate it.
Well, Lego feet boosted in 2,000 sats.
Pew, pew, pew.
More fountain feedback. You seem to be reading boosts I can't see when viewing podcasts. Am I missing something? I'd like to see them all so I can refer to some of them later.
Not all the boosts are in the comments thread yet in Fountain, but they will be soon. They are for some of the other shows. Just a little back-end thing we have to update to get them into Fountain. Then you'll be able to see all of them. Southern Fried Sassafras comes in with 4,444 sats because it is a bunch of ducks. And, we have, look at all these people are reporting. He says he wants a feature added to Fountain podcast season, so I'll write that down. I will. Oh, he says, never mind. I figured out a way to solve that for private. Okay, well, there you go.
That was easy.
He says he did enjoy the LLM topic. He says it's pertinent to a future project that he's working on, and he's training a local LLM on the internal knowledge base and documentation.
I bet we're going to see a lot more of that.
That seems useful, right? Imagine, and for new employees and stuff coming on board.
It makes me think, too, it's kind of applying the same benefits we get from open source software, where you can just use it without having to ask for permission. I mean, ask permission where it makes sense, where it's required, all that, but, like, I can imagine you want that functionality. You're like, okay, well, now we got to go get some SaaS, and I got to get my boss to approve it, and then the head of IT approves it, and then accounting approves it, and it finally gets authorized, and then 2 months later, we've got it. Or if you had, the gumption, the know-how, the access to the tools, you could just start doing it and test it out and see if it's even worth doing.
Build it yourself. Awesome.
Red 5 comes in with a row of ducks. For a document scanner on Android, I use OpenScan.
Okay.
All right. I then use Paperless Share to send the scanned document over to Paperless NGX for OCR and safekeeping reference.
Paperless Share to kind of bridge them together.
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. Written that down too, you guys. Thank you very much. We're going to be set. We could each try one of these on our...
That's a great idea.
Yeah, Chris, would you send me your notes after the episode?
Yeah, okay.
Just scan them up.
My scribble?
Yeah, well, whatever.
Yeah, scan them. We can OCR.
Well, Vmax sent us 10,000 Satoshis All through right. Fountain. Thank you.
That's great.
Coming in hot with the boost.
Here's another one for the Fountain team. I mainly listen to podcasts in the car over Bluetooth. On the Pixel 7, it is maddening when 1 to 2 times in about a 30-minute trip, Fountain will simply crash.
That is a memory issue on your device, I believe. I think that might be what that is. Mm. I was looking at another issue similar to that, and it could be that your system's running out of RAM. You might have something in the background that's eating it up because... I have a Pixel 7 and I run it all the time, but running through this process has been very interesting because you start to see some similar issues in there. And I think that is a low memory condition. I could be wrong.
Would there be benefit to whatever the, going in and saying like, don't optimize this app for Fountain perhaps?
Oh, yes. That's probably a great idea. I may have done that a long time ago. I don't know. I am very, very excited about the future of podcast apps. And I think the Fountain team, they're a small team, but they move quick.
No kidding.
And they're, they have been in there answering all of these if they can.
That's impressive.
Directly in Fountain. So that's really great. So yes, but double check and then follow up and let me know there. Vmax, could be some memory management issues there. This is something you definitely run into if you're using Android Auto as well. And then if you use Bluetooth to do the audio portion, all of that consumes a surprising amount of resources. BeardedZero.bin comes in with a lucky 6,666 sats. So that's a bunch of ducks.
Quacka waka, it's a treasure. Yippee!
And he gave us some great feedback on dynamic playlists. He talks about, how cool is this? He sets up playlists for, like, JB specifically. I'm honored.
Aww.
News, family, and exercise. And we had another, remember we had another listener who had, like, the dad pods?
Folks are doing stuff I hadn't even thought
to do. Just have like a dumb old list of podcasts. I'm like such a basic. That is such a great, cool way to do it. He says, because it's great. So like you can listen to the latest NPR and then it'll just play the next BBC episode. Just keep on listening.
And it's in that, you're in that newsy zone.
Right? And you're in the, right, you're in the news zone.
Seems nice, especially if you're doing dishes or chores and you don't want to have to go pull your phone back out to go switch to whatever's next.
Yeah.
Well, and that kind of plays to what I was saying last episode, where I often reach to my podcast when I'm in a particular mood, and it's so nice to have these like pre-filters.
I'm going
to
give thought to this. You know, also you could have like a road trip playlist.
I'll bring it.
Just thinking about this. He also said on the topic of local AI, Upscale, that's UPSCAYL. Uses local AI to upscale your images. It does a decent job, and it works with AMD and NVIDIA cards. So it looks like this is an app for GNU/Linux and maybe the Mac. I'm not sure.
Yes. You know, if we can get the barrier to entry for these lower, that definitely seems like one that a lot of just regular old computer users could totally use.
This would I don't know if I've installed any AI app via Flathub yet. This could be the first one. It's on Flathub.
Okay.
Upscale. We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
I see. Yeah. I see our booster here asked a little bit about boosts for the members feed too, which we did a little research into, but it's not solved yet.
Not
but
solved. We are working on it. It is in the work queue. Yes, upscale looks really. I like that. I've been thinking, guys. Just one thing before I move off the upscale thing. I think we're pretty soon going to see these apps are going to be really, really good at upscaling lower res video and stuff like that. And I wonder if we're not going to be able to take some of our really old OG cell phone video and run it through a system like this and bring it up to the next level so it looks good on modern displays.
Finally unblur Bigfoot.
Maybe. Actually, it's funny you say that. There is unblurred AI footage of Bigfoot going around and it just really kills it. It's such a dude in a suit. It's so awful when you clear it up. That whole blurriness really adds to the effect.
And the shaky and the
Presley
Wee, PhD, comes in with 2,669 sats.
Hello, and thank you.
The most frustrating thing about the call to regulate AI is that they did not care when it was major companies using exploited data that everyday people were tricked into handing over to train the models. But as soon as the everyday person has the ability to speak truth with satire using those same tools, the hammers begin to come down, proving that our elected representatives don't represent us, the people.
Yeah, you might be onto something there. Yeah, because there was lots of, discussion about building these AI tools for a long time, and we never heard anybody screaming about regulation then. But then ChatGPT comes along.
Yeah, I think it made it real for a lot of the folks.
Yeah.
You know, previously you're like, what is this thing?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah, that might be it. It's just it became a real tangible thing.
Well, the Galactic Starfish boosted in 8,996 Satoshis.
B-O-O-S-T!
Here's three rows of ducks plus a few ugly ducklings for some sat splits. Regarding fancy fountain features, granular playback speed and silent skipping.
Yeah.
I use both on AntennaPod and it cuts down my listening time to an amount manageable in my life as an avid podcast listener without changing the listening experience drastically.
What is granular playback speed? Is that like 1.23?
Maybe like a smooth slider instead of just like 1.5 or 1.25 or whatever.
Yeah, interesting. So you could custom set it to the pod.
Right. Different speakers probably are, clearer or less clear at different ratios.
Well, they give an example here. It feels unnatural to me to hear my podcast hosts at 1.25 speed over my usual 1.1 times speed.
Yeah.
1.1 times. Is that even worth doing? I guess it is.
I guess a little bit, maybe on aggregate, and then, you cut out the silences. But I have tried that, the silence cutting, and I feel like I get stressed out. I start listening because everybody seems like they're talking really fast.
Right, there's no breaks.
Yeah, like, calm down.
Well, and I find, at least for some of the podcasts that I listen to, which are pretty information dense, I like the time to let my sort of neurons catch up with the information that's coming in.
But if that's what it takes for the starfish to listen, I appreciate it. Thank you, Galactic Starfish.
I do want to say I was playing around and trying something out on AntennaPod the other day, and I don't know when it happened, but gosh, does AntennaPod look great? I mean, it feels like a much fancier app than I ever remember it feeling like, and that we have that as a sort of base podcast app on Android is great.
Yeah, it is. Yep. And maybe one day they'll get a few more features. I'd love, you know, lit support would be great.
Killer.
Mm-hmm. Gene Bean comes in with a row of ducks. Well, on the Will It Nicks, did you guys decide to try out own tracks? You suggested that before. Totally understand if not. I just wanted to follow along on the trip. We have tried own tracks. We did not try to Nix it this time. Maybe we'd have time for the Texas Linux trip.
Yeah, there's been too many things in the cooker for this one. But
yeah, we've been working on some big stuff. Not only have we been doing the migration setup that we told you about, but Wes has been working, like I said earlier in the show, on, you know, replumbing the RSS feed stuff. And so it's just kind of been on the back burner. But maybe.
I do think, too, like, you know, the own track setups we've had in the past were also kind of slapdash, and we didn't actually keep them around necessarily. So, like, if we were going to Nix something, having own tracks solidly in Nix would be pretty nice.
Yeah. And then we could just deploy it when we need it.
Rolled Gold comes in with a row of ducks. After bouncing off the ducks a few times, I decided to just pull the darn trigger and install Nix OS. It turns out that reading the comments in the default configuration.nix was the perfect amount of ducks and context for me to have that aha moment. I still don't understand most of the jargon. I mean, yeah, I think we're on that boat too. But I've been swapping desktop environments all afternoon just because I can.
It is fun.
It's very cool.
And it's like it was never there. It was like never there.
Clean.
Just gone. Fresh system.
Well, thanks for telling us about your experiences there, Gold. And good luck. Chime in again sometime in the future when you've played even more.
Yeah.
Let us know how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want updates. Thank you, everybody who boosted is below the 2000 sat cutoff as well. We got all your boosts and we have read them and we appreciate it. The total boost this week, 21 boosters. And we stacked 206,683 sats. Thank you, everybody, for the support of this production. We love your messages. It's a nice improv moment for us. And your sats are sending us on this road trip to scale.
We didn't think it was possible.
Pretty incredible. You know, in the past, we would have had a sponsor. We would have had a big, you know, big old agreements. And now we're just doing it with the sats from our audience directly. And we hope to return you the value. Thank you, everybody. Go grabs a new podcast app and tries out Fountain or Podverse or something like Castomatic. And now would be a great time because we are going to be rolling out new features for those apps. More things coming, but we're starting with live stream support, and I think that's a big one. And thank you also to all our SAT streamers. You don't always get a direct shout out, but we're monitoring. We watch it on the daily dashboard as it comes in, and it's a big part. It actually brings that total up even higher. And so you guys out there, we see you, and we really appreciate you. Thank you, everybody. And we also appreciate our members. It's a whole lot of appreciation going along. It's one of my favorite parts of the show. It's really rewarding. Thank you, everybody. Now, the pick this week was almost my topic, but I just started using it, and I felt like I needed more time with it to cook. It's called AnyType, and it is going directly after Notion. Are you familiar with Notion at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is an open source free alternative that you can use to keep, you know, keep track of your tasks, your ideas, documents, workflow. It's all local. It's end-to-end encrypted, and it uses P2P syncing. So you sync between the applications directly.
So no sync service required in theory. Wow.
Right. And future versions will have collaboration. They don't have that now. And they use an interesting concept for backup. The entire notebook is generated from a 12-word seed phrase, kind of like a Bitcoin wallet.
Huh.
So when you restore that seed phrase, and it somehow restores your notes. I've just started using AnyType. But it's really for anybody that's been tempted by Notion but doesn't want to, you know, subscribe to Notion or doesn't need what Notion offers. You can find it at anytype.io. And, of course, they got a client for all the various OSs, obviously, or else I wouldn't tell you about it. And I've really kind of just started to scratch the surface, but I can see the utility in it. I think it could be useful. I was experimenting with, again, taking notes for the trip, trying to figure out if this would be a way to store that stuff.
This looks surprisingly polished already. I mean, yeah. I assume it's early days, but I mean, they've got apps for the mobile platforms, a bunch of stuff on GitHub, a really nice website.
I think they pivoted. So I think they were maybe, and I'm really new to all this, but I think maybe they were solving another problem. So they had this tech built and they pivoted to a Notion alternative. So they kind of had a lot of the lower level foundation built. And now we have this, anytype.io, if you want to check it out. I've been enjoying it. Again, only been using it for a few days, but I've liked it a lot. That's it for us, though. If you'd like to support the show directly, you can become a member. We have it linked at linuxunplugged.com/membership, where you'll find a link up there. You get an ad-free version of the show, or you get the bootleg, which is clocking in right now at 3 hours and 24-ish minutes.
Oh, boy.
That's a big show, lots of content there. We all get together and try to put something special for our members.
Who needs a playlist when you've got one giant show?
Yeah. You only need one show a week. It's the bootleg version. You just hang out with us for even longer, right? Hey, if we're going to see you at scale, come up and say hi. Don't be shy. And don't forget about our lunch. We'd love to see you there. It's just all coming together. We'll bring that. I'm going to bring the RS-36S or whatever it is with us. We'll bring the tuxedo machine. We'll try the tuxedo on the road, too. Get some on-the-road testing. We'll come back with a review for that. A lot coming up still.
So much to do.
Of course, our coverage of NixCon.
The first.
Very excited about that. So we will be live. We'll be live either from the scale floor or from our Airbnb. I don't know where we're going to be live, but we'll be live next Sunday. And, of course, throughout the week, we have all the times at jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
And, of course, links to what we talked about today, that's at linuxunplugged.com/553. And a bunch of great shows over at jupiterbroadcasting.com, including that fantastic self-hosted podcast, the Coda Radio podcast, and go check out This Week in Bitcoin.show, new weekly Bitcoin show covering the signal you need, getting outrageously great responses. So go listen. You might like it even if you're not a Bitcoiner. Check it out, This Week in Bitcoin.show. Thank you so much for tuning this week's episode of the Unplugged Program. If we don't see at scale, don't worry, friends. We'll be here next week in the RSS feed. Next week will be Tuesday, as in Sunday.
Yeah, some sort of animal time, right?